Penny Hardaway was on the he was on the Point Forward podcast, which features Andre Iguodala and Evan Turner, and there was a lot to get to. There's a lot to get to on this front that we can break down. I want to start with what he had to say about Ashton Hardaway. Ashton Hardaway, his son, after 1 year at the University of Memphis, averaging 2.8 points per game, decent three-point shooter, 6'8", definitely a forward. He transfers out, ends up going to St. Mary's. Penny Hardaway, though, did not, I mean, it doesn't seem like he's all that broken up about it, considering it's his son and he wants to see what's best for his son. But the way he explained it, I thought was pretty interesting. Go ahead and play that sound.
What's the type of conversation like when he's like, yo, Pops, I think I'm going to transfer out and head to St. Mary's? It takes one thing to be able to recognize that, but to be able to remove yourself and have that type of support system, what's that mindset like? Is it just one thing of like caring for the best situation for all your players? Or are you like, yo, I got a 24-year-old flamethrower that that might be shooting 45%. He might be giving me a contract extension, son. Like, you know what I mean? What's that conversation like?
No, I think
that's a real thing to go through.
Right. I think in today's world, you know, when Ashton went back to L.A., he and Bronny are really close friends. Bronny got in the portal and decided to, you know, to put his name in the NBA draft. And right after that, you know, Ashton spoke about wanting to do that because I don't think he was ever comfortable here because we kind of forced it. And I felt kind of guilty for that because it's probably not where he really wanted to come. I think he wanted to make me proud to come here. But I think St. Mary's is a wonderful choice for him because that's more his style, his flow, and what he wants to do. Even though I wanted him around me every day to just, you know, to pour into him. But in today's world, I mean, there's other coaches' sons around the country that I've seen that have transferred and gone other places. And you can't do anything but champion it and just applaud it and say, hey, I'm going to support you in whatever you do, and I'll be there whenever you need me. But he's trying to create his own path, and I definitely support that. But it is weird, you know, to have your son transfer, but at the end of the day, you know that in today's world, nothing is weird anymore. It's just how it is, and you just let them be free and not want to hold them back or hold them down from their dreams.
Yeah, and it's a supportive father. That's first and foremost. I applaud Penny for seeing this and saying, hey, maybe you don't fit the scheme as well as you should. You should probably try to find your own path. I know you tried to make me proud on the front end, but if it's not working out here and you don't find the playing time and the role that you need, go elsewhere. And I think that St. Mary's is a great place for him to land.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have the ability to spot up, be a spot-up shooter. You know, the defense, his defensive limitations aren't going to be as highlighted, I think, in the West Coast Conference as they are in the AAC and with this out-of-conference schedule that the Tigers are playing just about every year under Penny Hardaway. So there is that. But it really goes back to what we talked about. I think Penny sort of is confirming what we thought. He just didn't really fit the scheme. He's not an overly athletic guy by any stretch of the imagination. He's a spot-up three-point shooter. He's really good at that, and that's not necessarily what works in a Penny Hardaway system. You try to get up and down the floor. You try to run. You try to be super athletic. You try to be, you know, jump into passing lanes, get takeaways, turn defense into offense, and Ashton Hardaway never really fit that. And really, if you're reading through what Penny said, he basically said we kind of forced it. We were trying to fit a square peg into a round hole just because it's my son. And I think that there's a message to be gleaned or taken away from what Penny Hardaway said. If you look how he's recruiting this particular team going into next year, he's found more defensive ability. He's found more guys that can run up and down the floor. He's finding what really fits his scheme. And I think there's something to be said about moving away from your own son to go try and make that happen. Penny Hardaway and Ashton Hardaway, I both think, took away positives from this, and I think that this was the best thing that could have happened ultimately for both parties.
I thought it was a fantastic answer from Penny Hardaway, because at the end of the day, he was right. He was, you know, his main job is to be a supportive father and try to help out Ashton and put him in a situation that's best for him. And I think that it's tough to admit that you have some guilt about last season because you did try to force it. It just, you know, when you talk about the uncomfortability of it, you know, it's got to be hard to look at your son and be like, hey, man, you're not going to be playing today. Like, even though we're struggling, right, you're still not going to get any playing time. That's got to be tough. And I think it's best for Penny Hardaway and the Memphis Tigers. I think it's best for Ashton. He's a talented young player,
sure,
that can find his way. You know, Penny talked about NBA draft with him. I don't think he's necessarily close to that,
yeah,
but he's got the tools to maybe one day be there, and he can go to St. Mary's and show what he's got.
Yeah.
Because he's going to have opportunity there. He's going to have opportunity to play games and to let that thing fly from three. So I thought it was a great answer for Penny Hardaway. I'm happy that there's no drama behind it. We never really suspected there being any drama. It really just seemed like a numbers issue. Hey, man, you're not going to fit into my scheme. I know that you're a knockdown three-point shooter on paper, but at the end of the day, the guys that he's bringing in, they're defense first. They can shoot. They can shoot, some of them, but ultimately everybody that's coming into the scheme has got to be able to run his offense, has got to be able to run his defense, and I'm just not sure if Ashton had the ability to do that. And that doesn't mean he's a bad player. It just means, hey, we got to find a different spot for you. So kudos to Penny and kudos to Ashton for making this decision, even though it wasn't hard. Wasn't easy.
I think that the stylistic differences that Penny had with his son ultimately led to this, and it does show Penny's willing at this point after last year to move off of his own son,
sure,
to go try to fit his own style and fit his own scheme, and I think that's telling in the end of the day. Hopefully that works out on the back end, and next year is a fruitful year. Hopefully next year is an NCAA tournament year. They can win the AAC, and the guys that he has targeted and has brought in and has signed can ultimately lead that to happening, can make that happen. Now, also, we're going down the list here. Jason Munns did a nice little write-up about this in the Commercial Appeal. You can go check that out at commercialappeal.com. But also, Evan Turner asked if the job is still fun right now under the new sort of regime in college athletics with NIL and transfer portal and all these moving parts. And Penny Hardaway said, man, I don't know about saying fun. Obviously happy the guys are getting their name, image, and likeness, getting paid for that. But this thing has turned upside down, to be very honest. It's challenging, no lie. And then later he went on to talk about, I almost think he was talking directly about last year's group.
Had to.
When he said
this. Yeah.
But the later it gets, and you've got to have these guys, that number for NIL might jump up to $200,000 or $300,000. You start thinking, hey, man, you're not Evan Turner or Andre Iguodala. I don't know about that. To me, there was already an expectation. Now it's even higher expectation. When I start paying you that much money, you're making more than my assistant coaches. Now, I think there is a real thing to discuss about assistant coaches sometimes making less than the guys on the roster. I think that's a different power dynamic, and we continue to see that. It continues to show through. The power dynamic is shifting into the players' hands at least a little bit more, because now they have leverage to say, hey, if you're not coaching me right, I don't like how you're coaching me, you're coaching me too hard, I can get into the portal whenever the hell I please and go wherever the hell I want whenever I please. So It's this power struggle that you're dealing with now in college athletics. And Penny Hardaway, and I think this staff, has struggled with that a tad bit. You bring guys on campus, ultimately they end up leaving. And he's had a lot of that happen with his high school recruiting classes, including his son that we just got done talking about. But I think he was almost directly talking about last year's group, bringing in Javon Quinterly late, bringing in a Jaquan Walton late. $200,000, $300,000 sounds like about on par with what they were probably getting from the NIL collective. And when you're doing that late, when you're up against the wall, they have more leverage. These players have more leverage to get all that money up out of you. And it feels like that's sort of what happened last year. You had a lot of guys that stayed in the portal for whatever reason. I think there was a reason they were still in the portal so late. And by the time you get around to it, you become desperate and you start throwing money at these guys. And I don't know if that's the way to go to be successful in this day and age, even with NIL at your disposal.
Yeah, I definitely think he was talking about last year's group, and you saw the lesson that he seemed to have learned from that experience, where he hit it pretty hard early this year. Like, they've already got a lot of the guys on paper. They're trying to get him on campus at a certain date so that they can have them all together, and they're not meeting each other at the airport on the way to tournaments this
right.
season. It definitely seems like, from the answers that Penny Hardaway was giving during this interview, and it's a really good interview, I appreciated Penny's honesty
yeah.
during this interview.
And he usually is. But
he's usually very honest. Yeah, I know. But, you don't hear these types of answers from many coaches. Like, most coaches would be like, yeah, it's fine, I'm having a great time, da-da-da-da-da. Like, he was honest about it. It's the game of college athletics has evolved over the last few years. It is a different game than when Penny Hardaway took the Memphis job just a couple of seasons ago. It's a completely different sport with NIL and how it operates with the transfer portal. And I think, he made a mistake last year and how they dealt with it. And so far this offseason, it appears that they have learned from those mistakes. We just got to see.
Yes.
You have to have some reserved optimism about next season because of how it went down. But ultimately, I'm not surprised at all to hear him say this about last year's group, because that's definitely what happened. They probably got up against it and said, all right, we've got to get these guys.
We've got to fill out the roster. We need a point guard. Who's the last? Oh, Javon Quinterly's out there. How much money is it going to take? We have $100,000. He's like, no, it's going to take $300,000. Then you start throwing that money because you become desperate late in the recruiting calendar.
It's another one of those answers, too, where we've talked about it a lot, but I do think there needs to be some sort of reeling back in with this NIL thing. It feels like the wild, wild west right now.
Sure.
I'm all for player empowerment, but it feels like they might have a little bit too much leverage and power right now over universities and schools. So, you know, because he was talking
They have more power than professionals in a lot of these
Something
situations.
Needs to change, and I think that this answer from Penny indicates that that's probably how he feels too.
And it leads me into the other discussion. He says he wants to be an NBA coach. That's not a surprise. I think some people in this market, you know, fans have taken it the wrong way. But we know that in 2021, he was reportedly interviewed by the Orlando Magic, where he used to play and where he was an all-star, where he was an all-NBA caliber player. And he was reportedly a serious candidate. But he went on to say, I actually have a dream. It's a dream of mine to coach on the NBA level. I think about it daily. He said he thinks about it daily, even though he's got this job here at Memphis. I know I'll have to pay my dues and come in at whatever level, which is fine. But my goal is to coach in the league one day. I don't know when. It could be 5 years from now, 10 years from now. It could be earlier than that, but I definitely want to do that. So as opposed to the thought process behind he's going to be a Memphis Tiger for life, at some point he wants to move to the NBA level. Now, I don't necessarily – I think he's just sort of speaking. Sometimes Penny has the tendency to do that when he says, I'll come in at whatever level and pay my dues. You didn't really pay your dues getting to the University of Memphis. You never were an assistant coach at the college level. You were just at Memphis East winning state championships before you got this job. I know there was a calling from the local fans to get you in there. I don't think you'll have the same calling at the NBA level. I don't think that Penny Hardaway would be interested in leaving the University of Memphis to go be an assistant anywhere. I think he wants to build up a big enough resume to potentially be a head coach one day. And no one should blame him for that in the slightest. When we talk about coaching and playing, you want to play or coach at the highest possible level, right? You want to be at the peak of the profession in any industry. You out there right now, if you're a damn, I don't know, if you're a damn teacher, you want to become a professor. I mean, you want to be a professor at Harvard. You want to be at the highest level of your industry. There's no surprise that Penny Hardaway is not making ifs, ands, or buts about that. He's telling you up front that at some point, if the opportunity presented itself, I would love to be a head coach at the NBA level, and you can't blame him for that in the slightest. I do also think there is this outside thought that maybe his style of ball could fit into the NBA relatively well. He's taken a lot of lessons over his years in the NBA that he's sort of applying to this Memphis job at this current moment.
Yeah, I'm not shocked by this answer at all, and I also don't think it signals anything to worry about for Memphis fans. An answer that informs this answer during this interview, and we're going to talk about it here in a moment, but his knee surgery and how his career went in the back half of it, you have to wonder if he has an itch to be back in the NBA because there's some unresolved competitiveness that he misses about
right.
it, you know, some unresolved business that he wants to take care of. So it doesn't shock me at all to hear that Penny Hardaway wants to end up back in the NBA. I tend to agree with you. I think that the path that he would most likely go is try to build a resume within college basketball that's good enough to jump straight into a head coaching position. But if we looked up 10 years from now and he's an assistant on a team, I wouldn't be shocked either. It's his answers from this interview, each one informed another one for me.
Yes.
Like when he talked about NIL and how the college basketball game has changed, that probably has changed his thinking about how long he wants to stay in college basketball. If this thing doesn't stop being the wild, wild west, it's got to be hard to do every single year. And if there's no more fun in it, and you know, if it's just stress, I would understand why you might want to get out of college athletics and go to the NBA because you're dealing
with professionals. Go deal with multi-year contracts.
John Morant can't look at us and be like, I'm going to the transfer portal.
No,
that's not going to happen.
Right.
There's contracts in the NBA and things like that. So I really do think that each of his answers within this interview informed others. And when I heard this, I was like, oh, I wonder if, you know, he still has some unresolved competitiveness. He wants to get back in the NBA, scratch that itch because he got injured and his career got cut short. And then, you know, the game is evolving so much and it is stressful. It is difficult. It's a year-round gig that you have to do. Recruiting never stops. So that can get tiring over time. So that makes me think, yeah, he probably wants to end up in the NBA one day. And we know a few years ago there was that flirtation with the Orlando Magic. And, you know, maybe they come a-calling again one day.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that if he builds up this resume enough that he could be a solid NBA coach, but we're a long way off.
We're a long way from there.
We're a long way off of that. So we'll see what happens. But listen, in the end of the day, you want to coach at the top of the industry. You want to play. Like, you know, college players want to play in the NBA. They want to play in the NFL. You want to get to the peak of your industry. And for him to give that answer, you can take offense to it, the fact that he says he thinks about it every single day, even though he's coaching your hometown team. But that's he's telling you the absolute positive truth, and I don't mind that at all from Penny Hardaway. Now, on the microfracture front, I'm going to go ahead and play this sound because he's talked about this in the past. But with his knee and the injury he had to get a microfracture surgery. And for those that don't know what a microfracture surgery entails, they don't do it anymore on athletes for the most part. They sort of stopped doing it around 2016, 2017. I think Jadeveon Clowney is one of the last ones to ever have it, if that tells you anything. But I'll go through the names here relatively soon. But it's a supposedly minimally invasive procedure that repairs articular cartilage by creating small fractures in the bone. So they create small microfractures in the bone. Now, the holes that they create allow blood to form a clot, which over time, the thought would be you turn that cartilage, you turn that blood into cartilage, which fills the injured area. And it's supposed to strengthen your knee or your hip or wherever they're doing it at. But Penny Hardaway spoke on it, and he said it's one of the biggest mistakes of his entire career.
How was it for you when, you know, that knee injury, microfracture was new back then, for you to really have confidence in yourself every single day, the ups and downs of it? Some days you feel like yourself, some days you don't feel like yourself.
When I had the microfracture, I knew it was instantly the worst decision that I had made in my life because I could just tell I was different. It was taking me so long after a game to get out of the car. I knew then that something wasn't right and I was never the same after the microfracture surgery. And I was one of the first guys to have microfracture surgeries. And it felt like my left leg got weaker. My quad and my VMO on the strength work, it could never get strong enough. It just seemed like my left quad just stayed with it was very weak and atrophied the entire time and never got back as strong as the right. And I just knew I wasn't the same. But after the microfracture surgery, man, I knew at that point I was just trying to hold on to something that wasn't there, man. And mentally, it did mess with me. But at the same time, man, I feel like I was blessed. It'll definitely get you mentally, man, if you're not ready for it. And I've watched a lot of brothers just go through that, and I can definitely sympathize.
It sounds like hell, quite frankly. Sounds like hell on earth. And then you go through some of the names in the NBA in particular that had to go through a microfracture surgery. Chris Webber fell off the face of the earth. Tracy McGrady, once he got it late in his career, fell off the face of the earth. Greg Oden, before he got into the NBA. We thought Greg Oden is the number one pick. He was going to be phenomenal. He had the microfracture surgery. He never amounted to really anything in the NBA. How about this name, Chandler Parsons? As much as we hold contempt for him because of the money he seemingly stole, the four-year, $94 million contract from the Memphis Grizzlies, that microfracture surgery is something he had to battle with consistently, and he never got back to where he was supposed to be. And then I start to look even around, you know, football and the NFL. Think about these names. Jadeveon Clowney. Jadeveon Clowney, after he got it sort of at the end of his time or sort of in the middle of his time with the Texans, I think he's probably the best example of somebody that's actually lived through it at least a little bit. He had a 9.5 sack year last year, but he's never lived up to the billing of the number one pick that he was supposed to be coming out of South Carolina. Miles Jack, a guy I played against at UCLA, he was great his first few years with the Jaguars. But by the time he got to that second contract and he had that microfracture surgery, he was never the same. How about this name? Melvin Gordon. Same exact thing. I don't know why they perpetuated, why they allowed this surgery to persist, you know, late into the 2010s. Like 2016, 2017, you still had guys getting it. But every example you look at, these guys get it, and then they fall off the face of the earth. Their career goes to relative non-existence.
Right.
And it's frustrating that, you know, Penny Hardaway at the peak of his powers was told that this was the right way to go, and he never was able to recover the same way.
It's a who's who of NBA and sports what ifs on that list. It is crazy when you read off that list and how many guys are on there that you ask yourself, what if they were able to stay healthy? What if they could get back to
Amari Stoudemire,
I didn't even mention. He's one of the biggest ones. I think you said Greg Oden, too. One of the biggest ones. Because when they actually played, they were dominant. But once they had those surgeries, they were just never, ever the same. And, you know, there's this funny trend going around TikTok right now and NBA Twitter about, you have no idea how good Tim Duncan was. It's an older player that's talking to a young podcaster that just says something ridiculous about Tim Duncan. I think he said, like, AD was better than Tim Duncan, which is just like, shut up and turn off your microphone. You have no idea how good Tim Duncan was. I really do think, like, in the city of Memphis, we know.
Yes.
But at large, Penny Hardaway in his prime.
You don't know.
I'm not even sure
really
if he scratched the surface of his prime. He was unreal. You are still seeing highlights to this day of the few seasons that he had in the NBA and how dominant he was. He would have had a chance to be a top five player in this NBA. I go back and watch his highlights all the time. He's hitting moves that guys don't even think of doing today. God, he was so good.
It's like the point forward style of point guard.
He was
one of the first.
Yeah,
like obviously
he was like the second
Magic.
Coming of Magic. But
you
that's who
Magic.
He's compared to,
right?
Yeah.
But like still, like I don't think people understand the trend that was being set by guys like Penny Hardaway back in the early 2000s. Right, like it was just a completely different style of basketball player at that time that not a lot of people had seen. And, of course, it has to get cut short by this stupid microfracture surgery that has had a bunch of NFL players, NBA players, NHL players. It has led to careers being cut short.
I mean,
and it's kind of heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking when you hear Penny speak on it as much as he does.
In the 5 years.
Because there's regrets there.
Yes.
Like, what if I never would have got this? What if I would have gone a different route with this, stayed out of trying to, push myself back on the floor so quickly? Like, it could have gone so much differently for his career.
From 93 to 97, one of the best players in the NBA, four-time All-Star. He was an All-Star even in the season where he first got majorly injured. Third place voting in MVP one season. I think he has, like, two NBA first teams, second in Rookie of the Year. He would have been one of the all-time greats if he was able to stay healthy. It's an absolute shame what happened to him. And you know, that's why when people say, who are the biggest what-ifs in NBA history? It's Derrick Rose and then it's Penny Hardaway.
Yeah.
Those are the top two.
Yeah, and we've talked about that on multiple occasions. It's just, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
Unstoppable on 2K.
Yeah.
Unstoppable.
I hear that.